Hey guys, this is James from StylePunk.com. And no, there's not a couch potato mic this week. Once again, scheduling issues, blah, blah, blah. Had a friend out this weekend. It was fun, but we didn't get a chance to record a podcast, so I'm going to do one now. This will be another just James alone episode. It'll be different than the last one, though. I'm going to tackle a whole subject here. I'm still stumbling. It's weird to do podcasts alone. I don't know how Jack Spirico or any of the people that do solo podcasts manage to do them alone. I just feel more comfortable jibber jabbering with my buddy Mike or even Jeff Radke. I can't do a Wisconsin accent. If I try, every accent I ever try comes out as a Jamaican accent. Jeff Radke be like, "And now, man, we got the best cheese willows here in Wisconsin." Yeah, it's terrible. Mike does the accents. I don't do the accents. So what we're going to talk about today, and I will promise to try to not say 1,000 times. If you're doing the drinking game where you drink when I say you probably died last episode that I did solo. So you're not even going to be here to play the game again. There, you're dead. I just killed like 7 people, which is all of our listeners. I killed all 7 listeners. Jeff Radke, being that he's from Wisconsin and has an unconstitutionally great liver or whatever, probably is the only one left alive. Everyone else is dead drunk. Today, I want to talk about survival as a retirement plan. I heard about this several years ago from the Survival Podcast. It was in the forum, and this guy basically put out that, you know, his plan for retirement was not Social Security income, was not a 401k. His lifestyle, survivalism, was his retirement plan. It really clicked with me. I was like, that makes so much more sense. I mean, to be honest, everyone, if you're under 40, definitely. If you're 35 and below, you're not getting any goddamn Social Security. Not going to happen. You'll never see it. I've known my whole life, basically. When I grow up, you're not getting Social Security. That whole pyramid scheme is fucked. You're not going to get any of it. It'll never happen. You know, and that's kind of a lot of reason why a lot of, you know, young people just so pissed at the system. You know, we pay Social Security every single fucking week for nothing. It's ridiculous. You know, it's all that money coming out going to the government. I mean, it's not even, if it was, you know, some people will joke, you know, it's like, oh, you should just send me a picture of my old person because literally my paycheck is going to go fund some old person. That's not even true. The government doesn't even, that money is just coming from somewhere else. They're taking the money as soon as it hits Social Security and they're blowing it on a bullshit they don't need the first goddamn place. I get pretty worked up and pissed about, you know, Social Security. I don't like paying for things that I don't like. I don't like wasting money. And I definitely don't like giving the government more money to do bullshit on that it doesn't need to do in the, you know, any damn way. So with that said, survival as a retirement plan really, really clicked with me. It made the most sense. I pretty much like to take care of myself anyway. I've always been that way with like healthcare. I'd rather just take care of myself, you know, proper food, diet, whatever. It takes care of you. I don't have to go to the doctor. I'm not sick all the time. I'm not sickly. I don't have diabetes. I don't have any fucking disease that needs constant medication. If you're born with it, that's a whole different thing. And a lot of diseases, even that you're born with, through diet and whatnot, can be overcome. I don't want to turn this into the diet hour. That's a different podcast. But so just to sort of jump into it, I actually made show notes because Mike wasn't here. I think that our definition of retirement that a lot of us have grown up with which is weird. It's a weird retirement as we know it now. It's just sort of a weird invention of the 20th century that just doesn't historically make any sense for humankind. We've like only recently have we ever worked until 60 and then just basically decided not to do anything for the rest of our lives and collect money through either originally your company would pension you and give you a retirement, and then Social Security was invented, and that plan was to save money for you throughout your life, and then you'd earn interest on that savings and then pay you back because people can't save our own money. So then that would pay you back, you know, and then Social Security pretty much was a failure. It's still sort of struggling and hanging on and not really, you know, and 401ks came out to supplement, you know, savings with the tax benefits and whatnot. And I really don't see a huge future in 401ks. I myself have gotten out of 401ks. I don't trust them in there. The government is already trying to get its grubby paws on the 401ks, even to the point where they've removed a lot of options in the 401ks within companies for a lot of outside things. Like, used to be every company would have a money market, a cash equivalency to hold funds with your 401k. I've noticed that I've swapped my, I had some money in my 401k in 2008, and I swapped it to a market fund, which was cash, so I didn't take a big hit in 2008, but it allowed us to change the funds fairly regularly at that job, so, you know, I was able to avoid the huge telegraph punch in the face that so many had. Not that I had a lot of money in 401k, which now I have none. I got out of the 401k altogether. I just I had other plans, and that's part of what we'll talk about today. So this whole notion of, you know, work until 65, 72, 75, whatever it is now, it's just a weird novelty of you know, the 20th century. Before, you would kind of, you know, obviously cavemen, you know, they would hunt and gather as long as they could, and then like their children, their offspring would bring them food, and usually the elders in the tribe get the best, the fattiest, the liver, you know, the best cuts of meat on the animal that they get. As you know, they hunted and they gave the children food, then the children get food and the elderly get food, you know, and the young, strong people get, you know, the leaner cuts of meat that no one really likes. This, you know, and people never really completely retired until they're basically on their deathbed. And that's, my plan is not to work until 65 and then stop doing everything altogether. I don't know if I ever want true retirement in that sense whatsoever. I do want definitely semi-retirement. And I have, compared to what I was doing, I basically have semi-retirement now. I put in some hours on the website, and then I have a part-time job, and that meets all of my financial needs. You know, if I make more money, then I'll save it. If not, you know, I all my needs are covered. I manage to still eat a clean paleo diet, and I'm happy. I don't need tons of money. I make now, God, a quarter maybe of what I used to make when I was in sort of corporate world. I also work a lot less hours. I have no stress. No one ever tells me that you cannot leave work now. You must stay and pull a 17-hour day to drive an hour home, to turn around and be back up in like 3 hours to drive back to work at least a 12-hour day. No. So that's, fuck all that. We don't need it. my definition, you know, of retirement now is work a little bit and work towards meeting all of your needs through self-sufficiency. So to cover this, to cover your basic human needs, you've got energy needs, which I could have broke that down more, but we'll say energy, water, heat, and food. And I sort of put heat in its own category. You can use energy to make heat, but I'm talking about power, to power your devices, through everyday your electricity and whatnot. First, we will talk about energy. So as it is now, you know, everyone has their monthly electric bill and they pay, whatever they pay. I used to be a real Nazi on controlling my electric bill because it's just an expense that I really didn't care for. It got up pretty high for a while. In an apartment, it hit like a $200 electric bill. There's no reason. Like, it was a tiny one-bedroom apartment. There's no reason that the electric bill should have been $200. So that's when I sort of got on the... I became a real energy watt Nazi to figure out what was going on, why I was blowing so much extra money. And I got my... At one point, I had a $10 electric bill, which I think was about the cheapest I got it. And that was in like January, because I didn't use... It was a warm winter. My apartment was like south facing with giant windows, and I just put like black curtains over them to suck up all the heat. And I didn't use any heat the entire winter. The tricky ass dishwasher. That's a lot of people's energy problems. If you've got a dishwasher, try have your wife or, you know, your girlfriend or whatever sit there at the breaker box. Show which one is the, because, you know, women don't know anything, of course. Show them which one is the breaker for the dishwasher, and go outside and watch your electric meter and have her turn it off and then back on, and then off and then back on. And Mike did the same thing. Mike, because he had his electric bill years ago got crazy high. And he went outside and he had his wife, Mrs. Mike's wife, turn the breakers off sort of one at a time. And, you know, he was watching and he was like, you know, they'd turn it off and it was like, you know, maybe a tiny flicker lower. You know, they had something else turned off and, you know, maybe it slowed down a little bit. And this thing, it was juking. Like, that thing was just spinning around, 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 around. And his wife finally got to the dishwasher and he turned it off. And the thing damn near went to a crawl. Like, it went from just spinning like a top to just crawling around. And he was like, he was on the phone with her, and he was like, hey, whatever you just did, turn that back on. And she flipped it back on, and it went, you know, back from crawling to just racing around there. He's like, turn it back off. Slow down. And he's like, what is that? And she's like, the dishwasher. He's like, leave it off. Don't ever turn it back. Tape over it. Don't ever turn it back on. For me, the dishwasher is one of those things where I just turned it off when I started saving electricity. I never used it again. I started hand washing dishes forever. I used my damn dishwasher for a drying rack at that point. And that was definitely one of the things that helped lower that bill. Faulty wiring, the heating element, I don't know what it was, but I don't like dishwashers. I mean, I hate doing dishes. But you just import a Russian bride and she does your dishes for you and they don't eat anything. So it's just a cost saving method there. Russian brides all the way. So like I was saying, you know, you $200, $100, you know, your bill for the electricity varies, you know, month to month. So if you go out there and you spend the money to buy a whole house solar system, you know, it can run you, you look around, you price it out with battery backup and all the wiring and all the hookups and stuff. Even if you do the solar work yourself to, you know, hook it into your electric box and whatnot, definitely, you definitely want an electrician. I will do any sort of work at all. I even don't mind electricity. But where it gets to, it could kill you, that's when I kind of freak out. Like, I've got to do, I need to hook my house up to an RV box that needs to be built onto Mike's meter box. And I'm willing to build the RV outlet where my house plug goes to. And I'm willing to dig the hole in the ground, run the wire through conduit under the ground, run it up to the other thing. I'm willing to do all of that, but the connections itself into the box, not so happy with. I'm willing to pay an electrician to come double check my RV box that I build, double check that everything's safe and legit, and plug in, you just open the damn meter box, and then, you know, wire it in there. It's not hard. I've seen it done. But it could kill me. So I don't do it. Same thing with the solar panels. Will you do the wiring? I would be okay with putting the panels on my roof, doing all that wiring. But when it actually comes to like backfeeding it or whatnot and stuff, I would definitely want an electrician for that. And like I was saying, solar panels could cost you $10,000 or more, $20,000. Make sure when you're shopping, you want to factor in what the payback time is. So if you're spending $200, you know, a month, you're looking at like $2,400 a year. How many years is that, you know, until you pay back, what, like 5-6 years or so? Which isn't terrible. And you got to think, they usually have about a 20-year life. So if you spend 10 years or so paying back, you know, until you reach your cost output, then you've got another at least 10 years, probably longer. I've seen solar panels that should have died so long ago, and they're still working fine. As long as they don't get damaged, I wouldn't really have an issue with it. And then at that point, you still probably wouldn't have to replace all the panels, maybe just a panel or so. And then you don't have to worry about that monthly $200, $100, whatever it is. Definitely I would say, and a big part of that cost would be building a decent battery backup system to run your power through so that when you have nice sunshiny days, you're storing all that energy. And when you have rain, you still have energy. And I'm also not saying, so after you build your solar system, and I don't necessarily think that you have to build it all at once. I mean, you might get cost savings, possibly. But I mean if you start buying the parts and you can go out and you can buy one solar panel now. I don't know if you get discounts for buying like 10 at a time. But if you find one that's good, you can buy it, and then you could buy the stuff to hook it up, but buy the level so that it's the whole house equivalent, and not necessarily like, don't buy a charge controller for one panel. Get a charge controller that can hold all the panels you plan to get, and I'm not an expert in solar stuff. That way, your other equipment is already scaled to your needs, and as you add more panels, you can do that. And I've been told that you shouldn't add batteries into a system, as in you should have all your batteries at once and then use that. And I kind of disagree with that. I mean, if you can only buy one battery at a time, I would rather do that than buy no batteries. I'd rather you build your future home solar system on a small scale that's upgradable, that's expandable. The stuff that you can expand, like you can buy one solar panel and you can buy the charge control you need to charge your whole battery bank, and it should be just fine charging one battery. You know, and then buy like your solar panel box, buy all the stuff made so that when you fully finish your system, it should be ready. And then you're really not spending that much money at a time. I mean, if you have, by God, if you've got $10,000 to throw at a solar system, go right ahead. More power to you. Most of us are broke-ass motherfuckers, though. And we, you know, if I'm just buying a panel now because I have some spare cash, say this week your boss is like, you know, it's slammed, fucking you work some overtime, you do that. And then that's, you know, an investment in a solar panel like that that's going to last you for a long time makes more sense than the return on an investment on the solar panel that's going to provide you power in the future seems better to me than some banks right now that have, you know, no interest rate and your money's just going to sit there. And to be honest, some people, they don't do so good with saving money. I mean, if it's there, you might spend it. Emergencies happen. If you have your emergency cash set aside, I would just say spend your money on your preps, especially lifelong preps. Like building towards your solar panel. Work out a time frame to have it completely built. If you're one of the people that can save towards it, buy it all out, you'll probably will get a discount. You'll probably get a better deal buying it all at once and either installing it yourself or hiring an installer who might have a deal for, you know, all in one package, you know, with insulation over what I'm saying, piece at a time. But piece at a time doesn't let you, there's no chance of like blowing that money. And the value of something like a solar panel, the resale value is going to be good still, especially, you know, unopened. I myself, if I get extra money, I'm going to start buying solar panels and just installing them and build my system as I go. So yeah, solar power, batteries, that's where I would invest my money for my solar self-sufficiency. Moving on to the next category is water. If you live in a city, you definitely won't be allowed to drill a well in your suburban yard. Out in the sticks, I've seen some really good videos and some like DIY stuff, like free, like not even buying stuff, to build this little kit to drill your own well. I mean, it's neat. It uses water pressure and like a pump, and it's, I mean, just off the shelf stuff, super cheap. People are digging their own wells, you know, obviously not hundreds and hundreds of thousands of feet down, but some pretty deep wells for, you know, pockets. And if you had that done, that's like $20,000 or whatever. So I mean, for self-sufficiency, I really like well water. I mean, if your well water is tested and good, especially, but wells and if you have a spring, even better. I'm going to get a little ranty here. Not even a Jeff Radke or a Couch Potato Mike to reel me in. But, I mean, for self-sufficiency, a well with even a dedicated solar backup system is great. It's probably not the route I'm going to go here on Mike's land. I mean, maybe as a project, we might do that, what I was talking about, the DIY, like, well digging thing. Just using like high pressure water just to blast it down and then a pump to bring it up. God, if I could find the link, I'd share it with you. If you know what I'm talking about, comment it in the thread. I spent hours and hours one time watching YouTube videos on it. I mean, maybe as a project, I mean, well, for that matter, there is, and I didn't even have this on the list. There's a stream, a creek that runs down the hill. Like, I don't know. There's a creek a couple hundred steps down the hill from where I live. You could do a ram pump, and I've seen some great videos on ram pumps. So if that's a situation like you have as well, where you've got a running water down from you, you can always build a ram pump that moves the water up the hill for free. And you're looking at sub $100 to build one, and they just work, and they work all the time. Out at when I went to ZombieCon, they had one running water from Man Bath up the hill, run through Berkey filters, and it worked. It worked great. So that's a ram pump's another great option. The option that I'm more than likely to go with here, besides trying a ram pump, because I don't think the... So, rainwater. Rainwater collection is definitely my way. Just collect them. My little house could probably, through a good rain, give me enough water if I had several barrels. I can also run the water off the Mike's house, too. Put some... Because I don't think he has gutters. So... you do that, and then that would easily be enough. And for self-sufficiently, I know, like, most people, your water bill isn't even that much. You probably don't even notice it. When I was in apartments for years, water was always included. Never paid for water. But tricky shit can happen. So, out here at Mike's place, his water bill, 1 month was zero, which made no sense. And like they had some sort of water main breakage, so they didn't know what to charge people. How janky is that? So they just didn't charge anyone. And then the next month, I think they charged Mike like $3. And he was like, okay, $0, $3, that's no fine. And they gave him a $90 water bill. And pretty much historically, his bill has always been $30. So... that's so far beyond the norm. Like, maybe they just averaged up, hey, we didn't charge you for the past 2 months, we'll just tack on that $60 to this one, and that'll make your bill. Maybe that's what they're thinking. I'm not real sure. But that's still, for a lot of people, you know, I'm sure Mike didn't set aside the $30 because he didn't think he had a bill. You know, and if your normal bills are strict and you have a $100 bill all of a sudden, you're struggling. You're like, fuck this, I don't have this money. Smart thing would have been to probably bankroll the $30. I know Mike does have some savings, but still, shit comes up like that. So with rainwater, especially if you run the rainwater into a cistern, depending on your house needs and your rain, like, it's been raining so much here in Tennessee, and I'm not a fan of rain, and it's kind of chilling things down a little bit, which is good, but I hate the mud, and I hate not being able to go outside because I hate being in the rain. So mud, rain, I hate it. But it rains enough that if I had, say, four rain barrels, four, you know, 55-gallon barrels, to be honest, all my water right now, minus going next door to Mike's house to shower, I use from a garden hose that I run into a water cooler jug thing. And, you know, I drink my couple cups of coffee and my water and whatnot, so I'm maybe using, if we count the shower, 5 gallons a day. No shower, probably a gallon-ish a day. You're definitely a gallon or so when I'm, you know, not working. When I'm home, I'm using more water. But with the 55-gallon rain barrels, obviously, you know, it's, I've got a lot of redundancy there. Throw up a pump to them that runs off a battery that runs off the solar. And that's so the point of the survival as a retirement is you're getting rid of those recurring bills. That's what sucks your energy and your time and your money, is getting those recurring bills. By doing this, you eliminate that $30 or whatever it is a month, or that occasional fuck you in the ass $100 bill, you know, or God, my first house I ever lived in, fresh, you know, like 18 years old, 19 years old, got my own place, got my own water in my own name. One of the pipes under the house busted. My cat is all on me. Say hi, Jordan. Right in my face. Yeah, the water pipe busted under my house, spilling out, I don't know, for weeks or something before it got fixed because no one knew. And they sent me like a $500 water bill. Well, I didn't have that kind of money. Well, so, and I'm sure a lot of people, I mean, if at your house, if your water breaks like that, you know, you catch it in time, that still might be $100,000 water bill, not to mention all the water damage. So that's another bill eliminated, and, you know, possible issue there. So, I mean, obviously I have a tiny house, so I have tiny water requirements. One guy, one cat. It's not that bad. You know, a couple rain barrels and I'm set for good, basically. You know, I'd rather drink filtered rainwater anyway. You have a bigger house, you're going to want to consider bigger cistern usage, especially for watering your gardens and stuff, if you're going to water the gardens from that. So, you know, a couple thousand gallon cisterns, that might be the solution. A slightly bigger house, like an IBC tote, that might be what you need. You know, and like I said before, with the solar thing, you can start small and build up. Maybe you just throw on a couple rain barrels and you have, you know, you water your garden a little bit less because you have rainwater you can use on it, or, you know, outside washing up or something. You can reduce your bill and work on eliminating it. So that's, you know, the more you reduce it, the less you got to pay, the more money you have extra, the more money you can spend to add these retirement things so that you're not spending that money. And then eventually all your money is for you. And that we'll talk about that later, but then you don't need as much money, which is exactly where I'm at in life. Next up is heat. And this definitely depends on your locale. As in, if you live in South Texas, your need for heat, not that bad. You know, Southern California, you know, the tip of Florida, the Mediterranean. You know, because I have a shout out to my one New Zealand listener. Or, I had an Australian, no, maybe just a New Zealander. Anyway. You know, your need depends on that. Obviously, you know where you live. Like, if you're Jeff Radke, you definitely need to consider winter heat when you're dealing with, like, negative 30s and shit. Here in Tennessee, we hardly ever get sub-zero. We get down around, I don't know, last year, we actually did have, like, one or two days sub-zero, which was terrible. And then we had some pretty cold days, but that was towards the end, and it really didn't last long. It really didn't last long at all. So our need for heat, not so high. I mean, so far this year, I actually don't even have a heater, as sad as that is to say. I've had one. I mean, it's only November, which, I mean, I know, like, Jeff Radke, you're probably like, "Ah, James, I've already froze my nuts off." Because we've already established I can't do accents. But yeah, down here, I had one morning where I was chilly, and I was just like, screw it, I just went to bed. I woke up, it wasn't as chilly because it warmed up throughout the day. So I'm kind of building. Anyway, I'm super ranty. This is a weird episode. But hopefully it doesn't suck too bad, and if it does, I'll punch you in the face. My number one heat source is wood. Definitely, I mean, for the bigger houses, you definitely want to have a bigger, you know, wood heat, and you'll go through more wood, especially if your house wasn't designed very well, you know, for solar heat retention. If it wasn't designed to be heated that way, you'll have to think about that. Smaller houses, especially tiny houses, which is, you know, what I live in. This house is 204 square feet. One of the big issues that I run into is, so if you live in a decent to moderate sized house and you go looking around on Craigslist or whatever, you can find, you know, even like thrift stores and, you know, not yard sales, but, you know, possibly like flea markets and stuff, you can find wood burning stoves. You can go to Lowe's and find a wood burning stove sub $500. May not be the best, but it'll probably be decent. They don't make a lot of really good tiny house heaters. There are some options for marine boats, for like houseboats, and sell boats that are pretty decent. Some of them are overmade. I mean, you're looking at about $1,000. You're not going to be able to go pick up one sub $500 on really any of the tiny house wood stoves that I saw. There's a really neat company in the UK making tiny house wood stoves. Gorgeous designs. Can't remember the name for the life of me. But you're looking at, one, they have to ship, if you're in the United States like me, they have to ship overseas a cast iron stove. Well, the stove itself might be around $400. But then you look at shipping, and then you look at the wait list, and I think the wait list is months. So, I mean, it takes to the viability of that. There's a USA-made sort of tiny house stove that's really nice design. I love it. You're looking at like $1,000 for it, like the mini something stove. Maybe the guy will send me one to test. That would be awesome. I'm kind of building one. A lot of these, I really like the Rocket Mass stoves because they take so little fuel and give you so much radiant heat for so long. That's amazing. Rocket Mass stoves do take up a tremendous lot of space because of the mass. You got to have a decent sized mass to put out the heat. If you don't have enough mass, then you defeat the purpose. Like, you'll get the rockety stuff, and the stove that I built is definitely rockety, but you got to have the mass proportionate to radiate enough heat to make it worth it. And it's better if you build your home with that in mind. Instead of trying to retrofit the Rocket Mass stove in a house already, especially if it wasn't built during the process. I mean, I'm iffy about putting a huge Cobb Rocket Mass heater that would take up, you know, tons of room in my tiny house when I really don't need that much heat anyway. So I like wood heat. There's other options. I know Jeff Ratke has an outside wood-fired boiler that heats his house. Correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah, Dimitri. But that's definitely a way, sort of outside feeding in. That's one of the things I thought about. Like, could I build a outside, I wouldn't say rocket mass heater, but some sort of rocket heater that would run the heat in the house? One of the things I was thinking about, you know, because so my tiny house is not built on wheels. It's a converted sort of shed that was built to be like a house, and then the inside was customized like a house. If you've seen pictures online, you've seen it. But it has runner boards on the bottom that it sits on. Well, it sits on bricks. The bricks sit on the boards sit on the bricks that sit on the ground. I thought about building a rocket mass heater outside with the exhaust going all the way under the slats, so weaving in and out, and then cobbing them off so there's no vent, and the air blows underneath the house. That way it warms the floor radiantly, but without direct heat. So it couldn't warm the floor, you know, it wouldn't warm it too hot. It would be, you know, at most 78 degrees, which would be perfect, and then it radiates the house, and when you step on a warm floor, your whole body feels warmer. Radiant heat is the best, in my opinion. I've never been a big fan of sort of central air heat. Central air conditioning, I love. So, I mean, that's another thing, you know, sort of spitballing, talking. I like fire, and I'm a pyromaniac. So, wood heat. Tiny house, you can build a tiny wood heater and get away with it. That's sort of what my plan is. I've kind of looked at some alcohol burning stove heaters. If you ever build those little pop can, nah, I'm Jeff Dimitri, like Coke can, because I'm in the South, we call everything a Coke. Those little Coke can stoves, you know, I've got a couple, everyone builds them, that burn off of, you know, alcohol, denatured alcohol, or heat in the yellow bottle, not the red bottle. You know, those things actually put off a tremendous amount of heat. So I just thought about upscaling them and then running a feed line into it and then maybe putting a mass over them, like the gravel pit things, like the the glass beads to absorb heat and then radiate that out, or surround it by fire bricks possibly to radiate heat. So I don't know. I probably will build several like heater things in the house to sort of play with and see what we do here. I would not say not having a chimney in here. That would be a bad idea. Obviously, we know that. A couple of the other things I've thought about is I've seen plans recently on Facebook for using mulch to heat your house. And the pictures look like they built a giant circle of like a chicken wire fencing, probably 12 feet in diameter. And you fill it with mulch as you go, and then you fill in what looked like one of those bendy plastic pipes, conduit, like bendy plastic ductwork, and you spiral it through it. And so it looked like they started at the bottom. I don't really know that it matters, and maybe you could double back on yourself, to be honest. So you feed it in, and you spiral it through the compost going up. It must have been 6 feet tall or more of probably wood chips or manure. So you'd probably have to get like a dump truck load full of wood chips and build in that. And you'll get heat for the entire winter, basically from just the heat produced from the composting chips. And then you have forced air. So you'll have to run that off of solar. I mean, easily. Those little blowers don't take that much energy. You blow it through. As it circles through the compost, it picks up all the heat. The air gets warmed, because changing the air temperature is easier than like changing water or anything else. Even though I've seen that compost design used for like hot water to make baths, which we'll talk about. I mean, that covers that too. And then you run it in through your window or something, or you put it in a ductwork to blow it in. And you've got, I would say, basically free heat. I mean, if you go chop and mulch up the own stuff yourself, or you get the own material to compost, then basically it's free heat, yeah. Especially with a solar panel to work on it. Is this episode? Oh, we're going to get a full episode, guys. Hot diggity damn. So that way, I've thought about doing that. That's one possible way, especially for a house as small as mine. For really large houses, you might look at a couple of those if that's the way you want to go. Or downsizing your house, which would be a better way to go. I've seen some really neat solar heaters. They're basically like glass boxes that absorb heat, and they blow it into your window on the south-facing side. I can't really give you too much details about them. I've sort of looked at them. If the price is right, then I might build one. Like, you know, I think I've seen like sub $50, you know, just plywood and some black spray paint and some glass, possibly could get away with plexiglass. And it's sort of slanted down from your window, and, you know, the sun hits it and it beats it up and warms it up, and then hot air rises. So it rises up through the slant into your window, into your house. And at least all day long, you've got, bye-bye, Jorn. My cat's leaving me. You've got hot air blowing through. I've done several similar things in my apartment a couple years ago where, similar as in principle, but not actually in design. So I had the black curtains over my window to absorb heat. And behind that, I put some black plastic to also absorb heat, but I didn't put it covering the entire window. I put a strip of it basically so that it would superheat the air between the window, the black plastic, and the curtain, which would then pull in fresh air at the bottom of the gap that the plastic had and blow it out the top. For a while, I actually even had a fan mounted up there to help blow the hot air into the room. And, you know, that winter I didn't use any heat, so maybe it worked, maybe it didn't. I'm definitely doing some things with my windows this year just to avoid using some of the heat, which I don't have yet anyway. And it's mostly working. I haven't had any super, super cold mornings recently. a couple weeks ago, maybe. Also with that, there's two ways you can make hot water from your solar. So there's various ways of like wrapping copper tubing around the exhaust off of your wood heater, your wood stove, to run that to be your hot water. And when you do that, you definitely want to not have it go to a tank. Tankless is the way to go, because if you spiral it around your stove several times, you'll pick up enough heat easily to heat, but you don't want to store that. There's a great episode from Paul Wheaton, years ago, where he just talked about boom squish all the time. And I laughed so hard when he kept saying, you can use rocket mass stoves to heat water, but if you try heating a hot water tank, you've got about 99 ways to make boom squish and about one way to make a successful water heater. And it's just not worth it. I mean, especially in a pressurized system, it doesn't work. Don't do it. Don't be boom squish. You can, like I said, so the spiraling around there, that's one way to do it. We talked about the compost, so spiraling a garden hose throughout a fairly large, I mean, you want a big, big compost heap, wood chips or whatever, and you turn the faucet on or whatever, you turn your rainwater system through that, it spirals through, it gets the hot water, you'll get pretty hot water for a season. And then at the end of the season, you have compost and you start building a new pile for the next winter. That's another way. I've seen, and I think the method that I'm going to try at some point will be the roof mounted solar hot water heater, where you build like a 2x4s and some plywood and a box. You paint the box black. Inside you put, what was like, Coke cans or something. And you do that, and then you store your water in there, and then when you run it through, you get a bath or two a day, probably one. And that seems pretty good. I think I'm going to try that. I've looked at some other, like propane off-the-grid hot water heat. Eventually, for a tiny house, if I had a 500-pound pig, it would last me a lifetime. So that's, I mean, if you plan your system, like a propane system like that, big enough, or even like two pigs or something, and your needs are small enough like that, then you'll be fine. I mean, I prefer to use the sun when I can, not for like hippie reasons, but the sun is free, and it's usually always there. So that's kind of the way I would go, and if anything, have a tiny propane emergency backup system. Like there's some really good like EcoTemp on demand outside like hot water systems that I would totally use inside, and they run off like AD battery and a 20-pound propane tank, and the 20-pound tank is supposed to last forever. So that's an option that I've looked at for backup. Excuse me. Had to take a drink of hot cocoa. My voice was getting hard without silent mic here, couch potato mic, to back me up. So, solar hot water heater. Another one of the principles that I like, especially, so we talked about storing energy in your batteries through your solar panels. An efficient way to keep yourself warm during those cold months is electric blankets. They do not take up much electricity. Like we're talking about how radiant heat is the king, that's what your electric blankets and tiny electric heating units like that are. I don't mean like house heating. I mean, heating pads for like your bed. I used to always pre-warm my bed when I went to sleep. I quit doing that now because I lost my heating pad actually. And my heating blanket is, I still have that. I need to add another one to the system. They take up so little energy. Like, you can run them off battery backup systems. Stephen Harris has. That's sort of a spot solving of it. Like, You don't need to get your house super hot. I mean, even my house, it wouldn't take a lot to even get it super hot, which I wouldn't like anyway. But if you feel comfortable, and as long as your pipes aren't bursting and your stuff's not freezing solid in your house, you know, especially here in the South, it's not a problem. Keeping your temperature, maintaining the temperature of like 70, 65, 70 over like people that jack up their heat to like 90 in their house, that's not as hard. Like, you'll save so much fuel or energy by maintaining a lower temperature house and then heating yourself up to comfortable, you know. I mean, how many guys out there, you know, they're perfectly happy in like, you know, a 60 degree house or whatever, but their wives are bitching and moaning. This is the episode that every woman stops listening. I hate you, James. You're a dick. You know, but women tend to run colder usually. I mean, my friend Serenity, she listens to the podcast. Hi, Serenity. She's freezing cold all the time. So, you know, I'm perfectly happy 60 degree house. She would be freezing her female balls off. So, you know, slap on an electric blanket. She's getting that warm, radiant heat. You're fine at whatever temperature you're at, so everyone's happy. And you're not having to jack up the entire house or the room's heat, you know, to then make you uncomfortable. Just because one person, I mean, they can have the electric blanket heat themselves up. You can have your own electric blanket and have it not set as high. And then you're still not using as much electricity as you would to heat the entire room or as much energy at any point. So it's just it's a better bang for your buck, in my opinion. You're heating yourself, and it's cheaper, and it's more efficient, and it's better. I mean, I'm sorry, but radiant heat over stupid atmospheric heat, that just sucks. Spending too much time on that one. But yeah, I really like electric blankets and small heating pads like that. Small heating sources that are radiant that direct the heat directly into you. So next up we got food. So obviously we're not going to go deep into food storage. So buying extra food now for later is definitely, I mean, it's a staple of every prepper, every survivalist. Everyone does it, you know, for several reasons. If you buy it now, you beat inflation for later. If you stockpile enough food now, that's also a retirement. You eat your food during retirement, so a little bit less. But all that stuff only has so much of shelf life, and I don't want to cash out my 401k, buy like 2 pallets of fucking freeze dried food and MREs, and then just not work for years eating that. That's no, screw that. I'm not happy with that. But food storage can be part of your retirement plan, as in, like I said, you do beat inflation. Buying 2 cans now, you don't buy them when they go up in price. You buy them when they go down in price. You buy them when you have coupons for things. You buy deals, and you can supplement. A lot of stuff will expire. You don't need to keep it forever. But some stuff does last a really long time, and you can stockpile on that and spread it out through your retirement years, supplementing with new stuff as you need, but you have that stockpile to pull from. I probably have enough rice now to last me the rest of my life. Heaven forbid a mass apocalypse where I have to eat rice every day, which would make me very unhappy. So food storage, that's the main staple of our prepper survival existence. It's sort of the first part in the prepping for retirement here. But it's not, you're not reaching true sort of self sufficiency. You got self-reliance there. Like, you got X amount of days of food storage and then you're out. It's a non-renewable resource. That's why for survivalism, as a retirement plan, we want to focus on renewable things, things that keep going. So for me personally, my number one survival retirement thing is animals. I don't have them yet, but chickens, ducks, what, you know, eggs, 8 eggs every day. And that's an expense that I spend every single day. And like we're saying, we want to eliminate those ongoing recurring expenses. So, you know, obviously I have to feed the chickens, but you can put in fodder systems and reduce some of the amount of feed you have to pay. And you get better quality eggs that would cost you more money. And your feed to egg ratio would be better. I mean, you would... I don't know anyone that spends more on feed than they do over, you know, eggs over time. So I eat 3 eggs a day at least, sometimes 4 eggs. You know, and I'm spending about $3 or $4 per 18 for the cheap eggs. So probably $4 or $5 for the good eggs. And I could have those eggs here. And I'd only need 3 chickens. How much chicken feed, you know, non-organic, non-GMO chicken feed could I feed my chickens with, you know, for that? I could store enough for that, you know, like, between, on all this land, they could forage themselves easy. And I'd, you know, double my flock and get 6 birds, go ahead and get like 12 birds. And then if a couple birds don't lay, then I still have eggs. I have extra eggs to give Mike. I've got eggs for barter. You know, so chickens are my sort of top priority. I really love cow. Beef is my favorite. Grass-fed beef is my favorite. I just don't really see that as being an option for me. It's just too big. You need too much land. To have enough to have a breeding herd going on so that it was a renewable source. I just don't see that happening. I'm kind of thinking geese. Geese eat grass. They're red meat. They're tiny cow, basically. Hatching the eggs. I just see that, and I don't know about the, you know, nutrient density wise, fat, what the fat on that looks like, but I can only imagine since they're grass fed, they'll be pretty similar to cattle. That's something for me to look into. Rabbits, they breed like rabbits. So that's one of the things I plan on getting here fairly soon, probably next year. So that's an animal, geese, rabbits, ducks, possibly. I've never had duck and I've never had duck egg. So I definitely want to try that before I start investing money on it, but maybe just a duck or two. And then the time to ducks start producing eggs is so long. I think I heard 18 months. That's a pretty big upfront investment, you know. And possibly it turns out it's terrible. And then, you know, you wasted 18 months basically. And then you just eat duck, and hopefully you like duck. So those are my main. I've never had goat, but I don't like lamb. That lamb taste that it has, I'm not fond of. So, I'm just gonna go out on a limb that I assume that lamb and goat taste somewhat similar. And even talking about goats, I think Cheryl from the Crooked Tree Farm would, you know, murder me. So, chickens, geese, rabbits, that's sort of my renewable, easy animal food system that I'm thinking. And if I can, there's plenty of deer around here. I track deer. I can take a deer, and that's more meat that's renewable, and I don't have to actually feed them, except for maybe with my food forestry stuff. So next up, we got annual crops. I put that after animals. I'm going to have to cut this episode short. We're already an hour. So annual crops. You save your seeds, so make sure you get heritage seeds, non-hybrid seeds, so you can save your seeds and keep replanting those seeds. And then you've got your food crops. There's a lot of annual crops that I like. Unfortunately, I'd rather focus more on food forestry and renewable crops, you know, perennial crops. But more of the stuff that I usually tend to eat is in the annual crops, broccolis and cabbages and Brussels sprouts and all that stuff is annual crops, and a lot of the stuff that is perennials, you know, nuts and fruits are things that I really don't eat that much of, and that if I had them, they would be for sort of supplemental and actually in my mind, so moving on to the food forestry, I definitely want to have that as a supplement, some berries and stuff that I eat sometimes, you know, some bigger fruit trees, nut trees, but not really as a big staple of my diet. Like, I kind of want to have a food forest whose intent is to draw in animals for me to then take. You know, like, everyone's like, ah, oh, these deer are eating my crops and my plants. Like, that's kind of what my plan is. Like, I want to find deer candy and be like, oh, plant deer candy. Yep, they love that shit. Plant more of that to lure them in, you know, minus not having, like, Ted Nugent deer lure. But, you know, have the stuff they want out there to eat so that I'd rather eat deer than apricots. You know, if I happen to take a few, more power to me. But I'd rather eat animals over fruit. That's me. Not a big fruit person. Having a few fruit trees, you know, for barter and whatnot, excellent. You know, for when I happen to have a sweet tooth and I don't have stored sugar, yeah, sure, have some fruit. But I'd rather more of my food forest be designed as deer lore with, you know, the benefit of the fruit. But mostly I want to plant deer candy. Deer candy. Lastly, and real quick, we're gonna wrap this up with aquaponics, aquaculture. You can build like little IBC tote things with the water purifiers to get the fish pee out, you know, and sort of hyper do that. I've not seen a lot of good on like breeding, like tilapia breeders or whatever, and then you have to maintain the temperature of the water. I like big ponds that regulate their temperature and have stuff that can just breed in there and you just sort of harvest occasionally as you so need. I'm starting to lose my voice from this. I'm more fond of that than I am the aquaponics where you're swimming your filtered non-poo water. And I just, so if you could have a big pond and then stock it and have them breeding and being happy, probably the best thing you can do and really productive. So, and if you can, if by all means, if you have the power and stuff to keep a small system going and battery backup to run the, you know, immersion heaters and the water for the cold months, then if you've planned for that, then go ahead. I like systems that take care of themselves once they're set up. So I'd rather have a small pond with lots of fish. We went so long. Oh, we're not boring you guys to death. My monotone, I'm Ben Stein. So we've talked about all this as, you know, survival as a retirement plan. So we've talked about how you would use your self-sufficiency with your items here to then eliminate the need to buy them on a regular basis because they're renewing and they're providing for you. And so this has been my goal for years here, to eliminate debt and provide systems that are renewable, eliminate debt, which we talked about recently, and sort of downsize your life. I live in a tiny house. I have no debt on my tiny house, no mortgage to pay. So I've eliminated that whole bill, both of those bills, no car payment, no house payment for my life. The car, I'm sure, won't last forever in infinity, but it's lasting for now, and I don't have a bill on that. So, you know, next up, and the thing is, when you start downsizing your life like that, you then require less money. You can take some of that money and use it to buy things, like how I, you know, I had no debt, so I managed to finance this tiny house, which ran me 12 grand or 11, somewhere around there. Tiny houses cost more than you think they would. And mine's only 75% done, really. The couple things in the kitchen need to be done. The bathroom needs to be done. Everything else is done. And it's livable. But so as you work on having less bills and owing less money, you can also take some of your time and build some extra income streams, build a business, build some passive incomes, do some side jobs. Because the goal here for me is to work less doing things I hate and do more of what I love to do. I love to talk to you guys. I love to write when I'm feeling good. I love teaching what I've spent time learning and mastering and doing wrong 100 times so I can figure out one way that isn't wrong. So that's, you know, I do make some pennies from this website. So that's a source of income. I would like to spend more time building the website to build a little bit more money. And, you know, there's different ways online you can make money. You can build real physical businesses. You can do small little things. I've got a good friend of mine, Danielle. She does water kefir in Australia. And she supplies her water kefir, like pre-made product, to some stores around there. She makes money that way. She sells her water kefir. I've heard people call them kefir. I'd call them kefir. I am from the South, and I will call them kefir. She sells the grains. I possibly bought some for her. That may be illegal through customs, though. So if it is, I did not buy any from her. Especially you can't ship like the liquid kefir bottles like that, but the grains that are dehydrated can ship in a small flat box. You know, and that's what she does. That's her whole income is just selling this kefir and the grains, and that's all her money. And I know that she lives a pretty simple life, but she lives a happy life, and she eats paleo food, and she lives in Australia, and she travels, she hangs out on the beach when she's not working and doing school stuff with her dog. And, you know, why work a 70-hour work week, beat yourself to death, hate your life? I mean, at the end of my corporate career, I hated getting up in the morning. Like, people at work had not seen me smile in like a year. I smile more often now. So, we weren't meant to work. We weren't meant to work like that. It's not what makes humans happy. There are too many ways to make money. I mean, there's just too many ways to make money, especially with the internet age. The way that money is sort of, not money, but the way that people are changing the way that they're willing to buy stuff and pay for stuff. So with the internet now, you can basically download and get anything you want. So that's not the way that you make your money on your products anymore. You make products on people believing in you, on people being your fan. When people, like, they feel that connection with you, they really, really like you, even if they steal your stuff, they want to support you. I mean, say I downloaded an audiobook recently. I didn't pay for that audiobook. I really liked that audiobook, more or less. I liked the guy that wrote the book. So I'm going to spend money with him on his products, probably buy a physical copy of the book. Because, I mean, if I had downloaded it and the book sucked, I would have deleted it. It would have been like a trial. And, you know, in which case, if I went to the store, I bought the book, I read it, it sucked, I would have took it back, got my money back, we're in the same thing. I downloaded it, I like it, now I want to support this guy through his ventures. I want to have him on this podcast. I want to buy his stuff. And that's the way that the mentality of my generation really is going now. You really want to support the people that you like, the people that you believe in. Like, it's like your own small little tribe and community. Like, we're moving away from sort of these mega famous super people to, like, someone that, like, if you email me, james@survivalpunk.com, I will email you back. I will answer your question. I will say hi to you. So far, every time anyone from this audience has found me on Facebook, and a few of you have, my name, in case you're looking, is James Sicone, S-I-C-O-N-E, Burnett, B-U-R-N-E-T-T-E. I've accepted every single friend request if I can tell they're a fan of this show. And I will like and comment on your shit. It's moving more towards that, like a reciprocity system. I hate that word. I love that word, but I hate saying it. Same thing with handgun carry permits, the reciprocity, where Tennessee will honor Florida's and Arizona's and so on and so forth. So what I'm saying is build a little tribe community, find a way to make money on something you love doing, and you now have, with your downsized life and your survival as a retirement, so that your systems, you get rid of those recurring leeches that you have in your life, and you start to love life and enjoy it. That's what I'm saying. I mean, I posted something just like this, a picture I saw on Facebook a while back, and I had some people like, oh, this the guy that wrote this was a stupid socialist, and like all they could think was, you know, like, people don't want to work. That's not it. People don't want to work doing shit they hate for people that hate them. I mean, chances are your boss doesn't give a fuck about you, especially if you go up the ladder high enough. If you go to the CEO of a mega corporation, they don't know who you are, and they don't give a fuck about you. If the numbers say that you're obsolete and you're not being a benefit to the company, they'll cut you so fucking fast. You don't mean anything to them. And I don't want to live in a world like that. I don't want to slave away until I'm 80 to, you know, try to get some money from my Social Security or from my 401k so I can then, like, you know, eat granola the rest of my life and just feed the system. Fuck the system. We want out. There's other ways to make money. Take care of your systems. And love life, my friends. With that, DIY to survival retirement, my friends. Use guys.